and welcome now to the midday for a Wednesday. I'm Norman Gilliland, and a pleasure to have Michelle and Christina here. And, you know, I'm not sure it'll do a lot of good since you're twins for me to say, okay, Michelle, let's hear from you, and then Christina, let's hear from you, as I would ordinarily do. But welcome, both of you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yes, we're so happy to be here.
Been, can it be 4 years?
I know. Time flies.
Yeah. And you're in town, well, partly because you're from here, from Madison.
Absolutely. It's great to be back.
Went to Memorial. And anything else that you did in Madison when you were here other than performing a lot of concerto competitions?
Well, I mean, every time we come back here, it's really in the spirit of celebration. I mean, this is a community that we feel the people here raised us, and they gave us really strong roots. And they taught us what's important in life, the beauty and simplicity, and we're so grateful.
Yes, and that will be a big part this weekend when we are, you know, backstage. I mean, this upbringing we had here, it's kind of what gives us strength and to weather the good and the bad as things go on. And so when we're backstage this weekend, before we go out on stage, we will be saying a big thank you to everyone. Just the people of this community, both ones that we know and maybe people that we don't even know that have had, you know, great impact on our lives.
Sure. So you think of yourselves as Midwesterners, or are you more cosmopolitan now? I mean, you live in New York and you're traveling all over the world.
We're based in New York now. We love it. But we bring that which we were given here with us everywhere. And I think that's where we draw on through all of this, our career. And we also, to the musical community here, we in order to become a musician and to have a career in music, you have to have that experience of performing live with an orchestra. And that's something it's hard to get. I mean, if you look at most of the pianists we went to school with, they're from large metropolitan areas for the most part. The fact that this city of this size, we had two great orchestras that we are very grateful to, Madison Symphony and Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra. And they were the ones that gave us that experience to make us know this is what we want to do.
Oh, really? Is that where you came up with this feeling that, yes, we want to perform with orchestras?
Yes, and I don't think it's actually possible to, in a vacuum, decide whether this is what you want to do. You have to have opportunities to perform, and we grew up with both the symphony and the Wisconsin Chamber Orchestra, and we were so, so lucky to have that.
What do you get out of that orchestral performance? What makes it such a compelling thing?
Well, first of all, I mean, being surrounded by a bunch of musicians who inspire you and you respond to each other. And I remember when we were young, it's also very different. You're like this 9 or 10 year old kid when we started playing with an orchestra. And I mean, I remember Meister Domain kind of leading us through that. I mean, you're 10 years old, you're not really sure what you're doing yet. And you learn what it's like. And you also have a lot of people who are like, kind of leading you and encouraging you along the way, mentoring you, and that's really valuable.
What about the audience? Do you find any kind of different energy with an audience for an orchestral performance?
For sure. I mean, literally, I can almost feel this sounds strange, but I can almost feel the audience breathing with you and responding, and it actually changes how you play. And I think even as a small kid, there was nothing like it. I mean, I was so happy. I think I didn't even have words for it. I remember it. And I remember how much I looked forward to it when we were going to play with the orchestra. Every morning, I think I had put the concerto that I was going to play with the orchestra on my alarm clock radio. So every morning, I'd think about it. And it was just one of those things that, those like milestones that I remember as something that made me realize what joy music brings to us and to audiences.
Well, of course, you have a couple of CDs, and I was going to say, of course, they do not include orchestras, but of course, you get an orchestral sound out of the pianos.
Two pianos is a good medium for orchestra.
And, now, there's this one sonata by Mozart that, at least for a time, had the reputation for enhancing intelligence to those who listen to it. And I assume that would redouble for those who are actually playing it.
Oh, we hope so.
Let's hope so, yes.
Do you feel much more intelligent after playing and recording this sonata?
Sure.
I'm sure that's true, and I'm sure the other part is true. However, short-lived the extension of intelligence might be, it's certainly a piece that has positive effect on its hearers. We'll hear the first movement of it. It's the Mozart Piano Sonata in D, Kerschel 448, for two pianos, played by my guests today, Michelle and Christina Naughton. Thank you. was Christina and Michelle Naughton with the first movement. The entire thing is on the disc, which they recorded back in 2012, of Mozart's Sonata in D for two pianos. And what did you think?
It's interesting going back to these recordings because interestingly enough, we don't listen to our recordings that much after we make them.
Definitely not.
On to other things.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But these pieces are literally like old friends. Your relationship with them changes over time, but you're always changing, and it's certain things that I think you probably come to and you leave interpretation-wise and come back to maybe later. Mm-hmm. Maybe you change a little perspective on a composer as well after doing more of their works. I mean, Mozart is definitely a composer we're close to as a piano duo.
Sure.
He wrote a lot of music, and we're looking forward to playing Mozart this weekend with the Madison Symphony, in fact.
The one and only two-piano concerto by Mozart, which is one of his last things, I believe. Certainly one of the late ones, anyway. So let's talk about perfection. You listen to a recording that you made 4 years ago, and perhaps it was, perfect at the time, and maybe it still is perfect, but you would still do it differently today.
Well, different is not necessarily, better or worse. It's just something, music is always evolving. That's what's so fun about it. You're always looking for new things. I wouldn't really say, I don't think I've ever given a perfect performance and never will. And actually,
really?
It totally takes the pressure off. I mean, it's weird because you think that would actually be disappointing, but actually it's totally, it's freeing because you know that no matter what you do, it will never be as good as the music that the composer wrote. And in the case of great composers, which is all we put in.
I've seen that said that you'll never play it, the music that you play will never be as good as the music written. Do you buy that?
With most of the music that we choose to play, yes. With great composers. And I find great joy in the fact that no matter what, that I can't get there. I mean, that's why we like what we're doing, because it's a evolving process.
Can anybody get there?
Not sure.
No, probably not.
Yeah, nobody can get there. So this is kind of like a platonic thing here where you have this ideal piece of music and we only perceive it kind of dimly given our limited perspective and perception on it. Of course, it's a subjective thing anyway as to what's a perfect performance.
Of course. Right? And hopefully what we do at least sheds a new light on maybe what is there, maybe shines light on a new beauty that people haven't seen, or a different viewpoint of something that no one's noticed before. And that's why it's neat to have so many different people playing the same pieces.
You could, of course, some composers give you more pointers than others in terms of, the nuances of the piece. But you could play every note perfectly.
Was it like Scantron-wise, yes.
Yeah, but that wouldn't result in a perfect piece.
Exactly. And it's also, I'm always curious what it would be like with some of these composers that most of them, we can't talk to the composer himself, what they would actually have to say necessarily about the markings or anything in the music. Because now we've worked quite a bit with living composers as well.
Sure, we'll get to one. We'll get to a CD.
We can talk about it more. But it's interesting to see sometimes with composers what they mean by some of their instructions. Sometimes it's not what you thought it was. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure if you went back and talked to Mozart or Beethoven, there'd be some pretty interesting revelations.
Well, yeah, we have no way whatsoever of knowing what those pieces sounded like originally in Mozart's time, because the context was so different and not to be recreated. However much you try, you can't recreate all the circumstances around that piece of music. But just as your interpretations of music change over the course of time, who's to say that the composer's interpretations of the piece he or she had written would not change anyway?
Oh, they sometimes draft multiple copies of things later. There's a couple of versions of some things when composers always are
Well, look at Liszt, for example.
Yeah.
Many different versions of the things he wrote. Well, we spoke of living composers. This one, not living, but about 20th century, and one that you gravitated toward with some joy, and yet is not the first name that would come up for a lot of people, Olivier Messiaen.
Exactly. The piece that we're playing there, he actually composed, I think he was actually in a prisoner of war camp right before he wrote this, and
one of the concentration camps. Yeah.
This piece is just absolutely full of joy that, and you would never guess that, but that's what makes the piece.
There's lots of color. I mean, Messiaen had synesthesia, which is he would see colors through notes. And,
oh, one of those.
Yes, and I do wish I could ask him what colors he saw in some of this, but we can use our imaginations.
And we'll hear the last section of the seven sections of this Visions of the Amen by Messiaen. And before we get into that, though, you chose this. How did it come about? This is your first CD for Warner Classics.
Exactly. You mean how did we choose the whole album?
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, it's the same theme. We wanted to pick things that all were a different kind of joy. This Messiaen, obviously, it actually stems from his faith and just it's not like an ecstatic joy like that in the Adams. It's just an exuberance, and that was so much fun. We actually worked on that piece with John Adams himself.
We'll get to a bit of that later, time permitting. But this one, perhaps even more than the Adams, you work off a few calories, don't you?
Oh my gosh, sure.
it's an athletic workout.
Okay, here's the finale played by the Naughton Sisters.
Thank you.
So is that a chime effect that he's accomplishing there? It certainly seems like it.
Bells. Yeah. It's like the whole cosmos breaking out into song.
That was the final of the seven sections of Visions de l'Homme by Messiaen, as played by my guests during the midday today, Michelle and Christina Naughton. And how did you first come to know about that piece before we get to our quiz question?
Well, we've been listening to it, obviously, actually probably our whole lives, and then we've been familiar with Messiaen and his works our whole lives. We've done some solo works as well, so it just made sense that we would take this journey. It's something we hoped to do for a long time.
Well, our quiz question today actually has to do with journeys, and that's all I'm going to say by way of a clue. We'll have it right after this here on WPR. Here's yesterday's quiz question for review purposes. What's the significance of the following list of states and numbers? Virginia 8, Ohio 7, Massachusetts 4, New York 4, Texas 2, Vermont 2, and North Carolina 2 or 2.5 or something like that. Anyway, that is the number of presidents born in each of those states. Virginia still has the lead there. Why 2.5 maybe for North Carolina? Because we're not sure exactly whether Andrew Jackson was born in North or South Carolina. The boundaries being a little fuzzy back in, when was it, 1767. That was yesterday's question. Here is today's. As promised, it's a music question. 39 years after being distributed, this recording of Beethoven's Fifth still hasn't been listened to. What recording would that be, or copy of the recording? What's going on there? 39 years after being distributed, this copy of a recording of Beethoven's Fifth still hasn't been listened to. Why not, so far as we know, has it been listened to? You have about 26 minutes to answer that question. You can email your answer to us at midday@wpr.org. Or you can phone 1-800-442-7106 and give your answer to Ramona. And we'll see who wins, as always, from among all correct respondents. Now back with Michelle and Christina Naughton and a bit of Bach. This is an interesting choice for you to put in between two 20th and, I guess, 21st century works. Just a short little sonatina. What prompted that?
Well, this, it's actually, it's a very, probably the most profound joy anyone could imagine. Bach, you'd be surprised, but this doesn't sound like joy at all, but he wrote this piece for a funeral. But the title of the piece actually means God's time is the best time. And that's the joy that he found in that work. And that's why this whole album is on this whole different themes of joy, and it was something kind of that, you know, brought peace that we thought would fit in between these two very massive, energetic works.
Well, it certainly provides a contrast, and so we'll see how that sounds in this. When did you make this recording, by the way?
Last summer.
Last summer,
Last summer. So it's a little sonatina from a work by Johann Sebastian Bach.
Thank you.
Well, in the context of the CD in particular, it works very nicely, doesn't it, as a kind of a bridge from one modern work to another.
Exactly. Yes.
A little sonata by Bach, part of the CD that has a joy theme to it, although you just call it Christina and Michelle Naughton Visions, Adams, Bach, and Messiaen. Well, let's see. Why don't I repeat the quiz question, have that taken care of, and then we'll be hearing some more from that same CD, but this will be the John Adams, which will provide quite a contrast. Our quiz question again today, 39 years after being distributed, this recording of Beethoven's Fifth, it's actually only the first movement, still hasn't been listened to. Why is that? Where is this recording? Email your answer to us at midday@wpr.org, or you can phone 1-800-442-7106 and give your answer to Ramona. And we'll be talking with the Naughton sisters, the Naughton twins. Do you have a kind of a favored collective name that you go by?
I think just our names.
Yeah, because I know, you know, on your discs and everything, it just says Christina and Michelle Naughton, but then people refer to you variously as the sisters.
Exactly.
So, John Adams. Now, if somebody says, well, it's just so repetitive, you know, I have issues with that, what would you say?
Well, I think actually whenever he does use repetition, it's actually to create an effect. I mean, all his music, it holds together really well, and it's
almost
really
like a rhythmic bass.
There's like always a dancing feeling to his music, and that's
true,
kind
yeah.
of what. Well,
like,
I mean, he was when we played for him. Actually, you could literally see his physical reaction to the music. He was dancing, and that was really cool. It's very rare can you actually be playing composers' music and watch them dance to their own music while you're playing it. And
yeah, that was a positive experience for you, but how, going into it, did you feel playing music of the composer for the composer?
Well, we've done it actually for him a couple times. After we did this Alleluia Junction for him, he actually wrote something else for us, and we did the world premiere of it in New York, and
he watched over Skype.
So of course,
oh,
yeah,
over Skype. Of
yes,
course.
Yeah. So I mean, it was
whole new world,
quite.
It?
My heart was beating pretty fast, but in a good way. But of course.
So, what did he have to say the first time you played this for him? I mean,
actually, we got to hear a lot about his inspirations for the piece, and It's very different playing for a live composer than you'd think. Like, you'd think they'd be all like, oh, you didn't do this much.
Right.
That. They're not.
And sometimes
like
they'll say, oh, wow, I didn't think of that. That's kind of cool.
Uh-huh.
when you play something in a certain way. And the composers I've played for are very open-minded, actually, to different interpretations. I mean, there's always some things that are never okay. But in general, there's more than one right answer. There's definitely wrong answers, but there's more than one right.
I'm sure that's true. But most of the wrong answers would have to do with what? Just interpretation?
Interpretation, mm-hmm. Notes.
Oh, really? It's not a G-flat. Please don't play it.
Well, sometimes they'll fix the notes in the score as well.
They'll say,
I'm thinking that now that I hear that, maybe I want to adapt that.
Would this have been, I mean, given again all this kind of modern technology for listening to music, would this have been his first experience hearing this piece with you playing it, or did he have some previous way of hearing it?
That's an interesting story, actually. We first played this piece out in Central Park in New York live. It was an outdoor concert. They moved two pianos into the band shell in the middle of the park. It was broadcast, and somebody actually took a bootleg of it.
Uh-huh.
And John Adams himself found it in. We get a letter from him saying, hey, you know, so that's actually how that came about. So he had heard us before he heard us live. But
it wasn't really intended, but
yeah.
in this case, maybe did it help a little.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I wonder what I would have done had I known he was going to listen to that performance as I gave it, but sometimes it's better not to know.
Yes, you never know who's listening or what their reaction is to you.
Exactly.
All right, well, this is the finale from the multiple movements, three movements
yes.
of the Alleluia Junction by John Adams, Christina and Michelle Naughton. how many takes of that?
Actually, that was pretty much one take. It's a funny story.
No kidding.
Because we spent all day recording the piece in the studio. It'd been, what, 8-9 hours? And then
you're pretty tired.
Pretty tired, but it was time to play a concert after that.
Oh, you're kidding. Wow.
Yeah. And then they decided just to record the concert because why not? And something about having live people there, we fed off that energy and ended up using like 95% of that live recording.
And in a minute, we'll figure out, we'll get some insights into that whole recording process. But first, this here on WPR. Back with Michelle and Christina Naughton, who hail from Madison, Wisconsin, but for quite some time now have been headquartered in New York and travel around the world from there and perform often in New York also. But they're going to be performing with the Madison Symphony this weekend, Friday night at 7:30, Saturday night at 8 and Sunday afternoon at 2:30 in the Overture Center. They're also, for that occasion, they'll be performing the Mozart 2 Piano Concerto, and then they'll be performing the Poulenc 2 Piano Concerto on the 20th at 2:30 with Milwaukee Symphony. So a busy trip to the home state.
Yes, exactly.
That's for great. You all. We were talking a little bit about how the recording is actually put together, so walk us through that process a little bit more.
How you mean how we record
yeah.
and how
yeah.
that's all?
How do you get from you playing the piano to a CD?
Wow. Some pretty intense days in the studio where you pretty much see nothing but the studio. That goes on for a few days. Yeah, and you always take that time, too, while you're there to listen to playbacks yourself, which it's pretty painful.
It can be a painful experience, but
it's very educational.
Yeah, it's also educational, and especially our first CD, which we actually made in Germany, we were probably getting, what, like 1 or 2 hours of sleep a night for like 5 nights while we were doing
for
this because we were so jet-lagged. And
that's pretty grim. Do you think, though, that actually in any way is an advantage when you're just kind of so tired like that you have to concentrate?
Yes. Sometimes you're just not even nervous anymore. You're just too jealous.
So it actually, not necessarily that you'd recommend it, but
no,
it can be turned to your advantage.
But then you know exactly what you have to do. You have to focus. It's pretty obvious. So, we were lucky, too. We've had great producers, too. They're kind of like your cheerleaders. They're sitting in a booth watching everything that you do, and they're there to, you know, with the bowl of chocolates when you need it. And so it's and after that, it's cool to realize that those days you've been in the studio, because it's a little bit different than live performance. They say, like, I think you get, when I perform live, I wake up because, I mean, there's an audience and they give me energy. When you're in a recording studio, sometimes it's hard. You get tired as the day goes on.
Sure, and you're not getting the response. You're not getting reinforcement from the audience.
Exactly. You have to imagine it, because you know the CD will eventually go to people. But
yeah, a very different kind of performing, wouldn't it be? Because you send that CD out there and you don't know how or when people are
exactly.
Listening to
yeah.
it. And what? Of course, you have wonderful rave reviews that you get from CDs as well as from concert performances. This is another 20th century piece. Witold Lutosławski, the Polish composer, and he wrote something like 200 works that were lost when Warsaw was, destroyed by the Germans during the last days of World War II. But this is kind of the survivor of that collection, and you do hear it occasionally. It's another tour de force, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's very fun to play. Apparently he used to play it in the bar with his friend.
Well, you have to take work where you can get it sometimes, you know. And it's one of the several composers who has been inspired by this original caprice by Paganini for solo violin to write variations. And so here are Christina and Michelle Naughton with the variations on a theme of Paganini by Lutosławski.
Thank you.
some pretty crazy stuff there, carried off quite gracefully by Christina and Michelle Naughton, who are going to be performing with the Madison Symphony this weekend, a Mozart 2 piano concerto. That gets us to the solution to today's 12:30 quiz question. And as long as you're in a position over there, we'll, with Ramona's permission, have you give the answer to the quiz question. Is that okay?
The quiz question?
Okay. Quiz question today, 39 years after being distributed, this copy of a recording of Beethoven's Fifth still hasn't been listened to. And where is this recording?
It's in space on a Viking probe.
That's the place. That's the one. That's right. It's just the first movement. We don't know for sure that nobody's listened to it, but I suspect not. Maybe they're waiting for the other three movements to come. But anyway, our winner is?
Michael Higgins from Rothschild.
Rothschild, Wisconsin. Yeah. Okay, so if you will call back with your address, we'll send a very special prize your way. It's a copy of one of the two CDs that we've been listening to of the Naughton Twins. It's the earlier one, right?
Yes, the early one, and early one. We hope you enjoy it.
Autographed to you personally by the Twins. Stay right there, and thanks for joining me. I hope it will be another 4 years, by the way.
I know. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up, it's the news, then more music with Lori here on WPR.